And we were confident, especially after kind of going through your process, going through your classes, that we could go in and, you know, if we had the market, if we had an audience, that we could capture, you know, our share of business and do well. And, you know, so far we have, we're in our, you know, 4-bedroom Cherry Log market. We're right now the fifth highest revenue for the last 12 months. And that's, you know, through our launch, through discounted prices, all of that. So very excited for, you know, what the next full year brings.
Hi, I'm Wyatt.
And I'm Grace.
And you're listening to Our Dad and your host of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore, and we're back with our Experts Corner interviews, my favorite conversations every single week I get to have with short-term rental investors willing to share the good, the bad, the ugly of short-term rental investing. Today, we've got Mr. Chris Barnett joining us. And Chris, I appreciate you joining us, letting people listen in on this conversation.
Yeah, looking forward to being here.
Awesome, man. Well, listen, I always like to, we're going to talk a lot about your journey into short-term rental investing. You've got a couple properties now. Talk about some lessons learned, some things that we did right, some things that we maybe wish we would have done different. We're going to dive into all that stuff, but I love to start with the backstory. I love to start with somebody, you know, what pays the bills, what got you interested in short-term rental investing, where you're from. And let's just start there, because I always find that when we're listening to these, that, you know, when people listen to these, it's always nice to hear people that many times you're like, I'm from that area, or I do that for a living. And so it's nice to know that a lot of us just didn't start with real estate investor in our resume, right? And so tell me a little bit about the backstory, what got you interested in real estate investing.
Yeah, for sure. So right now I live in Charlotte, North Carolina, from Richmond, Virginia originally. Been in sales and, you know, customer service basically my career, which is about 10 years or so at this point. So started with Enterprise, Rent-A-Car, did that for about 5-6 years, sold copiers for about a year, and then I've been in the medical sales field for the last 4. My wife's an attorney, so she graduated law school 2 years ago. She's been doing that for about 2 years. So those are our day jobs. And then got our first property a little over a year ago. So about this time last year, we launched our first property in Blue Ridge, Georgia, and then just launched our second one a little bit above Asheville, North Carolina this week, actually. Our guests are checking in tomorrow.
So. Yeah, first guest tomorrow. That's awesome. So this is that's exciting. So what got you, you know, traditional type of jobs, you know, sales role, mm-hmm. corporate job, wife's an attorney. And you guys, you know, what got you thinking maybe we want to run down this real estate road?
Yeah. So in Richmond, actually about like a month before I met my now wife, I had purchased a small house for myself in Richmond in the city. That was back in summer, fall of 2021. Okay. So when everything was starting to take off, interest rates were super low, got like a 3% on it. I'm like, this is great. It's in the city. I live here for a few years. You know, when I move out, I'll hold on to it, rent it out. And, you know, that'll just kind of be my entry into real estate. I'd always been semi interested in real estate, but just never kind of, you know, I'd always been focusing on work, my career, other stuff. It just hadn't been a priority at the time. Mm-hmm. So fast forward a couple of years, we lived in that house for about 2 years, and then my wife's work took us down to Charlotte. So then, you know, was looking at renting the property out, trying to figure out what to do with it. You know, the return I would have gotten from a long-term rental, I would have made, you know, best case scenario, like $200 a month above my mortgage. So yeah. Not even factoring in any of the other stuff that comes into it, all of that. And that's with, you know, a 3% interest rate, which, you know, we're probably not going to see for a long, right. long time, if ever. So then was just trying to figure out, you know, how do we do this? Do I take it and break even and just kind of hope for appreciation, or what do we do with it? You know, that was also then when the market was going crazy. So we were able to, you know, sell it for a good bit of a profit, which then was kind of our seed money to get into short-term rental. And, you know, about that time was when I had started finding you on Instagram. You know, I looked at Bigger Pockets, all of that, some of the different big rental places out there, just to kind of understand the world, see what options there are, and go from there. And, you know, I think what attracted us to the short-term rental is, you know, there's a lot more upside, have a lot more control on, you know, how much revenue we can bring in, all of that, versus long-term rental seem more so like managing expenses, right? You can only charge a certain amount on a long-term rental for monthly rent. Whereas, you know, the short-term rental, you can add amenities, add experiences, all of that to command a higher price.
Yeah.
So that was kind of what led us down the road of looking into short-term rentals.
Love it. And it probably being in the sell side of life, you know, it's interesting where a lot of people, sales, business owners, they get attracted to short-term rentals because they understand it and they look at it almost through that lens of what levers can I pull to make a little bit more money? And you're exactly right. It's one of the things that I got very much interested in short-term rentals early on as well was there were only so many levers I could pull with a long-term rental. There's only so many levers I could pull with a multifamily type of deal or any sort of other real estate, where short-term rentals gave me a lot more levers to pull, right? And things that I could do. Now, that doesn't come without decisions and money and work to be put in to do those and pull those levers, but they were there for us, right? And it also allowed us, and you saw early on just the benefit of, even though, yeah, you know, as a long-term rental, the Richmond property wasn't going to cash flow very well. You saw the benefit of owning, even for a short period of time, a quality asset in a quality market, right? And so the other thing that I always loved about short-term rentals is it allowed us to go buy quality assets in quality markets that appreciated well, that still had the potential to cash flow, right? And it was, you know, so for you, was it when you and Madison were talking about short-term rentals and exploring, I love the fact that you brought up, you know, like Bigger Pockets and some of these other platforms to have kind of a wide range of things that talk about, you know, all real estate stuff. And then you start to kind of figure out what niche or what passive income vehicle was going to work for you. Was it ever the attraction of having like an actual lifestyle asset as well, being able to use it? Was that ever part of it? Or was it like, where did that factor into it?
Yeah, that definitely factored into it a good bit. And, you know, since we've had our property down in Georgia for the last year, you know, we've enjoyed going down there a couple times. You know, fortunately, it's been pretty rented, so we haven't, you know, had as much opportunity to go down there as we might have initially thought. But I think we kind of see it more as a lifestyle asset for, you know, years down the road. Like, we don't have kids right now. You know, hopefully within the next couple of years, you know, we'll have kids and start building a family. So it's more so building from that standpoint, right? Building that lifestyle, having places that we can take our kids to in 5, 10, 15 years and have those memories. So, you know, we enjoy it now in the moment. We don't get down there, you know, quite as much as we had thought. But, you know, that's also a good thing because it's been rented a lot. So,
yeah, exactly. It's nice to have the option, though, right? And it's exactly. Okay. Listen, you want to go there with the friends, family, because I'm kind of like you now. At first, I was actually, you know, it was really fun for me to have that. And I kind of accidentally started realizing how fun it was to have these properties that I could use all the time and we could hang out with our friends and family with. But the more we start investing in, the longer we've been investing in them, we actually don't use them as often as we would like to sometimes. You know, there's some properties we use once a year. But it sure is fun to know that we've got that, you know, available to us when we want to go use them. And so when you were, so lifestyle asset was a part of it. The reason I asked that is, was that factoring into the markets that you were analyzing and interested in the very beginning? Or like, how did you guys go about, you know, identifying the market that you wanted to start in?
Yeah, that definitely factored into it. And, you know, with the long-term rental, you can't use it, right? So you don't have that enjoyment. So, you know, having that, our personal use aspect definitely factored into and was attractive for us wanting to look into this asset class. As far as how we picked our locations, like I said, you know, we're in Charlotte, North Carolina now. So initially we wanted something by the water. We were looking over at the beach, places around, you know, Wilmington, Oak Island, Topsail, you know, those areas over there. Quickly found out anything there that was going to, you know, cash flow was going to be well out of our budget for right now. For anything, you know, on the water, close to the water, anything that likely was going to be good, just wasn't in the cards for us at this point. So then we shifted more to sort of a mountain area. So we were looking in Western North Carolina, obviously through the group. I know yourself, some of the other members in Bodicey have a lot of properties in North Georgia between Blue Ridge, Cherry Log, that area. Yep. So that kind of drifted our search down in that area. Honestly, we had never heard of, or I had never heard of Blue Ridge, at least before, you know, joining and looking around for different properties. But, you know, as we looked at it, it kind of checked all the boxes of what we wanted, right? It was a growing market. We could get a nice mountain cabin with views that was close to, you know, the main attractions on paper with, you know, the cash flow expenses, all of that looked like it would at least break even year one and then have good projections in the coming years after that. So we're kind of opened up our, you know, buy box, so to speak, to not just looking at specific markets. Once we figured out what we initially wanted wasn't in our price point, and kind of shifted to, you know, some other areas that we'd be happy with and still good with.
Love it. I love that you brought up that your original, you know, number one location was, we started looking at it and you started underwriting it and you started thinking, hey, listen, the stuff that is performing in this market is out of our budget. And that takes a lot. Like that one little move seems like so obvious, right? You're like, okay, well, if it doesn't work, let's go to another market. I can't tell you how many people get stuck right there where they're like, well, I can't buy here, so I can't do this, right? What are you talking about, right? And so I wanted to kind of highlight that, just that little piece that sometimes we think seems so obvious. It's such a sticking point for a lot of people that are just getting started, right? And they're like, well, that area is not going to work, so I don't know if I can do this anymore.
Yeah, we had, and I'll give Jacob a big shout out because he helped us run through the numbers and he probably knocked some sense into me where, you know, I'm looking at stuff. I'm like, oh, this has that. This is close enough. I'm like, this should probably do good enough. And then he's like, yeah, no, this, you're looking at maybe 2/3 of what you projected as realistic. I'm like, yeah, that's not great.
That's not what I want to hear, right? But it's
sure, like, can we like jump it, bump it up a little bit here? Like, you probably get a little bit better.
It's funny you bring that up. And those of you who are listening, Jacob Payne is our acquisitions manager and does a lot of the reviews with all of our members. Like part of what we do is like look over your shoulder on the underwriting and make sure that that we're looking at the same thing you guys are looking at, right? And one of our members recently told me, he's like, man, he's like, I don't know, you know, I joined this group and all you do is tell me that this isn't going to work. This doesn't work. This doesn't work. And I'm like, well, wouldn't you rather hear us tell you that we don't think that's going to work before you buy it? And so that we can move on and find the right one that does work instead of me telling you everything just works. And he's like, yeah, actually, that's a good point. So it's a really good point. And so you kind of, you experience that same, sometimes the, what feels like a negative, mentor to tell you, that's not working there. Oh, that's not right. Right. And you're like, okay, well, but I love the fact that you guys pivoted and said, okay, let's figure out what does work. And, and so, you know, a lot of people speak to this a little bit. There's you bought in Blue Ridge, which is a major market down there in the Southeast now, very established, and you bought into it in 2024. You closed on that one. And many people would argue that prices were overinflated, that the saturation was too much, and it was a really hard market to compete in. And so I always tell everybody, you know, those big markets that feel like that usually have some of the best opportunities because there's a lot of money being spent there. We have to figure out how to go get our unfair share of that business, right? That's kind of our motto at Vodacy. But speak to the person who would tell you that. And when you decided to go into that market during that type of an environment, and then kind of what the results have been.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of going through this process was also discovering Blue Ridge ourselves, because I never heard of the town. To be honest, I didn't know Georgia had mountains until I had joined this group and figured that part out. So I also need to work on some geography, but, you know, we liked the fact that it was a big market, that there was already a demand, right? There were people going there before we were there, and, you know, long after we're gone, then people will still be going there most likely. Like, there's a lot of drive there. It's really close to a major city. It's like an hour and a half, 2 hours north of Atlanta, right? So a lot of that was important to us, you know, looking for more growing cities and states also, right? Georgia's growing, Atlanta's growing, all of that. So that just means more demand is going to want to go to vacation, right? And, you know, being in sales service, I'm pretty much always in competitive deals. So I'm not afraid of competing and showing the value and standing out. And we were confident, especially after kind of going through your process, going through your classes, that we could go in and, you know, if we had the market, if we had an audience, that we could capture, you know, our share of business and do well. And, you know, so far we're in our, you know, 4-bedroom cherry log market. We're right now the fifth highest revenue for the last 12 months. And that's, you know, through our launch, through discounted prices, all of that. So very excited for, you know, what the next full year brings. And also, you know, we're going to pretty much break, we're going to break even on that property this year, which was our goal from the start. We had to replace the whole HVAC in January, like a month after we launched it. So if we didn't have that, we would have turned a profit. But, you know, knowing that we could go in, capture those, you know, 5-star reviews, you know, keep our calendar pretty much full, and go from there was a really good confidence builder.
That's awesome. And yeah, an amazing launch, even with a big capital expense of the HVAC system, being able to break even, number 4 revenue property, first year in a major market, and in a really crowded space in the market. 4-bedroom space in the market is a very crowded space in that market. And to be number 4 revenue after year one, like you said, with launch pricing and everything else and that launch phase going on, capital expenses coming in. And I mean, that's pretty exciting. That's awesome. It's a great launch. And there's, just so you guys know, as always, if you're a longtime listener, but if you're a new listener, you will, as a reminder, we put all these properties in the show notes. So you'll be able to see Chris and Madison's properties, both of them that we're going to be talking about, because success leaves clues, you guys. There is not a lot of rocket science behind what we do. It is creating these amazing experiences for specific target audiences, doing a great job of articulating it, and then delivering that experience at a high level. And then you're just rinse and repeating, right? And you're selecting quality assets, setting them up correctly, and marketing them correctly. I mean, it's pretty easy to talk about. Sometimes it's harder to execute, right? And some of the decisions you're making along the way, especially the money you're spending on certain things, particularly setups and photo shoots and all that stuff that we're really dialing in, and you're like, man, in that phase of buying the property and setting it up, you're like, man, is money ever going to start coming in? And then ultimately those decisions we make help us be at the very top of these markets. And that's where you guys positioned yourself with this first one. And full disclosure, Chris, I didn't know mountains existed in Georgia either. I didn't know anything about Cherry Lager or Blue Ridge until I had this group either. And so, you know, I'm kind of a mountain snob. Any of us out west that live in the western mountains, right? We're kind of mountain snobs, and we think that we're the only mountains in the U.S. is the Rocky Mountains. And so we forget that there's actually mountains somewhere else. And so full disclosure, I was in your same position. And until I went out there, I was like, oh, this is pretty awesome. This is pretty fun. And I started, now I've been to,
you know, good little gem of a discovery we found.
Exactly. It was awesome. So you and I were in the same boat there. And so, and now it's one of our favorite places to go. And so different mountains than our mountains out west, but beautiful nonetheless. And just, you know, way more trees than what we have out west. Like, well, we have like these big mountains with long range views. And, you know, you can get up and you can see miles for miles and miles and miles. And there, I feel like there's so many trees that you don't get those big, huge, long range views unless you're right on top of a peak of somewhere, you know? And so it's a lot of fun out there. So, okay. So we got property number one, and then you guys decided to waste no time on deciding what to do next. And so walk me through that decision on, because we always say, let's just try to, you know, you don't have to buy 10 properties a year, but sometimes it's kind of nice to, once you get one going, we figure out when that next one is. If we can have a pace of somewhere around one a year or one every other year, that can be a really good position to put yourself in a 5 to 10 year time horizon. And so line me up and take me through that, you know, the, you know, one kind of got that one launched, we're operating. When did we make the decision for property number two?
Yeah. So like I said, we got it launched pretty much this time last year. So December of 24, you know, initially our plan wasn't to do anything in 2025. We got married in September. So a couple months ago. So that was kind of our big focus for the year. You know, wanted to be careful with, you know, how much we put into this, right? This was still a new adventure for us. So we didn't want to, you know, get ahead of ourselves too quickly. So our plan was to kind of roll through the year, see how stuff goes, you know, hope we can make it, hit our goals, you know, break even, and then just kind of see where that puts us from there. And, you know, ended up doing better than we expected at Blue Ridge. So, you know, that got off to a good start, got a lot of great reviews, and have had pretty full calendars, like I said. So that gave us the confidence to be like, okay, kind of to what you said before, we found the formula, we found the playbook, like this stuff works. We'd see the proof of concept. So that kind of gave us the confidence to, you know, go out a little bit further. And then also, I mean, I know you've talked about it before, but the tax advantages that we got back basically funded the down payment for our next property. Right. So we're like, okay, that was cool. We got that checked away, you know, we were able to save up, had a good sales year, so was able to save some of that up for furnishing costs, all of that. And then just started looking around, and, you know, with the change in the bonus depreciation this year, that kind of pushed us to be like, okay, it would make sense to do this again this year. You know, we're in a spot where we have enough saved up. We can go, we feel like comfortable going forward and pulling the trigger. And also then knowing, you know, we'll get some of that back here in a few months once we file our taxes as well. So I think all of that kind of led us to move on property number two a bit quicker than we expected.
Yeah. And how was the area? Was it because you were a little bit already familiar? Because you mentioned that you kind of started in the Western North Carolina mountains, and mm-hmm. that's where property number two is, and then kind of moved south down to Blue Ridge. But how'd you select the area for property number two?
Yeah. So we were looking in both. So we were looking in Blue Ridge. We were looking in Western North Carolina. Ideally for us, we wanted something a little bit closer. To where we are in Charlotte. So something we could hopefully use a bit more, you know, take a quick weekend trip over, even go out for a night or something like that. So we were hoping for something a bit closer, but we were also looking in Blue Ridge because we knew the market. We had a great team down there. We were confident in. I self-managed. So I had a great cleaner, good handyman, all of that down there that we felt confident in, you know, expanding down there because we knew the area, but also wanted to look and do our diligence on some stuff closer. So we were looking kind of all throughout Western North Carolina, Asheville, Bryson City, Maggie Valley, got connected with the realtor up there through another member, within Vodacy. And he turned us on to, Morris Hill, North Carolina, which is a ski resort town, basically. There's a ski resort up there called Hadley Point that had recently gotten, new ownership, put a lot of money into it, a lot of upgrades, all of that. So he kind of turned us on to a property that was there, you know, not ski in, ski out, but pretty darn close. Like you could walk a few hundred yards to the slopes from the property. Yeah. So turned us on to that, you know, looked into the area, everything it had, you know, it was a lot closer to Charlotte. Again, growing area with potential for, you know, if the ski resort takes off, then that's going to be awesome. And even with the history of what it had done underwriting, you know, before a lot of the investments to the ski resort came in, it still looked good on paper as well. And, you know, from looking at what it had and what we knew we could bring to it, you know, we thought there was still a good bit of upside for us to make an impact.
Yeah. And it turned out beautifully. How long before when you closed to when you had it set up and ready to launch? I know you said your first guest is actually tomorrow, but like, when did you guys close on that one? Cause I know you got married in September. So my guess is the closing was pretty close to that.
Yeah. So we went under contract middle of August. We did a 60-day close. That was non-negotiable because we got married in September.
Yeah.
So we kind of went under contract. We're like, all right, we'll figure this out when we get back after the wedding, basically.
Yeah.
So then we closed beginning of October, and had it up and running about 5 weeks or 5-6 weeks later. We had Josh Lehue and his team came in for photos that week before Thanksgiving. So then we got those back, launched it the day before Thanksgiving, and then bookings started to roll in. We are fortunate. My mother-in-law is an interior designer. So we hire her and my father-in-law to kind of help us out of the cabin, do a lot of the design, set up a lot of the furniture, all of that. So they've been a huge, huge help in that process as well.
Yeah. So you guys have a very hands-on family to be able to get these properties set up and launched and designed. And they look beautiful, by the way. I mean, again, you can go check out in the show notes. Did your mother-in-law help you with the design on the first property as well? Was it just kind of because they were very similar, you know, design, you know, and then the photography and everything with the lifestyle photography looks very good. So you guys are very hands-on in that setup phase and the management side of it, right? So talk to the people that are thinking, man, I got a full-time job. Do I have time for this? Because it's a question that a lot of people have is, you know, should I hire all this stuff out? How much time do I really need to take to set some of this stuff up? How much time should I take on managing these properties? Like, what do you, when you're looking at that and now that you've done one for a full year and you're adding that second one on, like, what do you feel like you're adding to your plate every time?
So I would say just you know, once we got it, obviously the setup phase is a lot, right? It's multiple trips down there. You know, we were fortunate that they're retired. So they were able to be there for a couple of weeks. You know, we would pay them to assemble furniture, do the designing, all of that. So that definitely took a big load off our plate.
Yeah.
As far as the, you know, once it's up and running, day-to-day management of it, I kind of like it. It's like I'm texting my friends basically, right? Yeah. Like everything you can do on Airbnb, you do on the app. guests will send in messages. I can answer them quickly. And, you know, typically that's that, right? Yeah. I think we've had, you know, one fire drill basically, which is when the heat went out when guests were there in January, which obviously that took, you know, a bit more time coordinating with getting that replaced, you know, making sure the guests were still taken care of and they didn't legit freeze while they were down there.
Right.
But, you know, beyond that, I think the day to day is a couple hours, you know, looking at the numbers monthly, kind of re-underwriting, looking at the properties, see how stuff's progressing, doing all that aspect of it. But the overall, like, guest communication, that side of it really hasn't been too much.
Yeah. And it's, you mentioned earlier that, you know, when you were kind of considering property number two, you, one of the benefits of the Blue Ridge market was you had a really good boots on the ground team and how critical that is when you are self-managing to have the right cleaners, maintenance, you know, the really the cleaners that are really connected down there make a huge difference when you're self-managing. Would you agree?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
She's phenomenal. So found her through a realtor down there, who referred us, the realtor we found from y'all. Yep. But she's phenomenal, goes above and beyond, really does more than, you know, what most cleaners probably would. You know, again, when the heat went out and we had guests there, it was one of the few times that, like, it every couple of years that it snows. So there was 3-4 inches of snow that they were calling for that weekend. And, you know, I called my cleaner. She was over there within an hour with space heaters and extra blankets, like little stuff like that for the guests. And then there's numerous times they've been able to pop over, you know, at a moment's notice, fix stuff before it gets bad, you know, keep an eye on the property, obviously do all the stuff that I can't be down there every single day to do. So, you know, having that great team definitely takes a lot of the pressure and stress off, because if stuff does go wrong, which it will, it's inevitable, like stuff's going to happen. I know I have good people in place that can make my life easier managing it from afar.
Yeah, especially, and the things that do go wrong, it's like there are going to be those issues that happen that you have to deal with, and having those the right people in place at the right time, and then the right communication that you have with the guest buys you a lot of grace, right? When people realize that stuff goes wrong, and people realize that something happens, and the way you handle it is really how you're judged. It's not, you don't get judged by the heat going out. They're not going to say, well, heat went out, so, you know, we're giving you a 1-star review. But if you would have ignored it and she didn't show up with the blankets and the heaters and everything else, and when you made it a priority, a lot of times those guests are like, man, we appreciate it. We know stuff happens. We appreciate you doing everything you could to make sure that we were comfortable and taken care of as well. Right. And it makes a difference on how you're judged at the end of the day with those guests.
Yeah, 100%. I think a lot of, you know, this is stuff I've learned from being in, you know, customer service and, you know, working for enterprise and dealing with rental vehicles and all that, like inevitably stuff goes wrong with those all the time. Right. So always fielding calls and questions and stuff. And it's, how do you manage it? Right. Can you make a joke? Can you smile? Can you still find a way to make their day positive in the face of something that, you know, might not be ideal? Obviously it's their vacation. It's, you know, their hard earned dollars that they're basically giving us by renting our property. You know, most people understand, and fortunately those guests did, that stuff does go wrong and sometimes stuff is out of our control. But then, like you said, it's how you handle it. Make them feel heard, still make them feel good, you know, do even little things as little gestures to make it feel like you understand and want to fix it as best you can for them.
Yeah. Absolutely. Awesome. So, and this is, we had one of our members who just bought the property. They launched it a couple weeks ago. Their very first guest showed up and just left. It looked like, they said, it looked like there was a party here. It looked like it was a frat party here. And they just spent a bunch of money on brand new furnishings and design and everything else. And the first guest came in and they were like, oh, I feel like the wind was just taken out of my sails. I was so excited to get this started. And then this happened and we're like, listen, once in a while you have those guests, they're so far the minority that you know, maybe it's really good you got it out of your way early, because usually you don't deal with one of those guests once every couple of years. And so, you know, but you also sometimes have great guests and something happens with the property. And so just be ready to handle some of those things and know that it's part of the game, and it doesn't define the entire game, especially if it happens in the very beginning. I mean, it would be very easy for you guys to get really discouraged right after you launch the property, 2 or 3 months into a property, and your entire heat system goes out. You're like, holy crap, what, you know, we just went through an inspection. We didn't catch this. We just went through, you know, we just bought this property. Now we have this big capital expense, right? But you still, you take care of it, you roll with the punch. And in the long-term game, even the first year, it didn't ruin and kill the first year, but it probably felt pretty discouraging 2 or 3 months into it when something like that happens, but it's how you handle it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, love it. Awesome. So we got property number two, first guest showing up tomorrow. Are you guys going to take a break for a minute? Let's let this one roll and enjoy the ski season, right? We got to see how the ski season goes there. And because that's the nice thing about these mountain markets anymore, especially the ski markets, is you got really two nice peak seasons, right? And, you know, like a Western North Carolina, Mars Hill, if that the ski resort picks up, even though like you got your foliage season, you got holidays, you got the ski season, then you got a little bit of a downturn before spring break and summer starts hitting the back up. And so these are becoming, you know, not as seasonal of markets as they used to be. They're becoming pretty close to year round markets, which is kind of fun. And in a lot of these, you know, I mean, in vacation rentals, naturally we're seasonal in most of these markets. But some of these mountain markets, one of my favorite parts about them is they're becoming the slow season is becoming shorter and shorter, it seems like, in a lot of these.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, you know, now there's even being down here in the South, like it doesn't get that cold, right?
Right.
So you can still be outdoors. Yes, you'll have your days where it's 10, 20 degrees, but right. You know, that's when you curl up by the fireplace and look out the window.
Yeah,
exactly. But then you still have days where it's 40, 50 degrees. You can go out, do some hiking, do what you want to do. Plus, you might get some snow. So that's always always fun part out here because we don't get it all the time like y'all do out in Utah.
Yeah, boy, I'll tell you what, I feel like I'm living in the South right now this year. It's we have got zero snow. So all you skiers that love to come out West, you got to kind of put a hold on that for a minute. I feel bad for all our skiers that love these mountains out here because we have had a warm fall and wind start to the winter so far. There's not a lot of snow in the mountains out here. It's today it's raining like crazy and it's 50 degrees. And so that's not very normal for us in December.
Yeah, not great for the ski slopes out there.
No, it's definitely not good for the skiers. And so I live at two ski basically two ski resorts, and I love watching them ski, but they're not real happy right now because there's not a lot of skiing going on out West.
So you can imagine. Hopefully it picks up for y'all.
Yeah, we're hoping. We're keeping our fingers crossed for him. So awesome, Chris. Well, listen, you and I could keep going and having a long conversation. I appreciate you letting us listen in on this one, but I always love to end the conversation with going back, right? There's lessons learned. There's things you would double down on. There's things you do again. You know, there's advice you want to give yourself on what you would do different maybe the next time around. You guys are eyeing, you know, maximizing two properties that you have and then eyeing maybe property number three and where that's going to be, maybe the beach next time. Who knows, right? And so, but what, going back and giving your younger self, and you're already way younger than I am, and so it's nice to have the start that you guys have, but giving your younger self some advice and saying, here's what I wish I would have known now that I'm going on property number three. If I knew this going into property number one and two, this is what I'd like to know. What would you tell that new listener or somebody that's just diving into the game, something that you wish you would have known from the very beginning or wish you would have done maybe different?
Yeah, I would say, you know, I think the biggest thing would be just don't be complacent, right? Don't be afraid to take that risk. You know, for us, this is, like you said, I'm in medical sales now. I travel a fair bit. You know, my wife's an attorney, so she works crazy hours, tight deadlines. And, you know, this isn't what we want our lives to be forever, right? We want to have kids in a couple of years, hopefully. And, you know, this is our way to kind of put us in a spot where hopefully we can take a step back and away from our day jobs and, you know, kind of be able to spend more time with them. So I would say kind of have that, you know, 5, 10, 15 year vision, right? We didn't come into this expecting to do everything in year one. And like you said, buy 10 properties and be able to quit our jobs tomorrow. Like for us, this has been a journey. This has been kind of a 5-10 year plan. We knew that going into it and, you know, we're good with that. We're happy with that. This is an avenue for us to kind of get some freedom back in a few years and kind of go from there and be able to spend more time with our future family. So I would say just don't be afraid to get uncomfortable, you know, whether that's changing jobs or, you know, going out on a limb for something that you feel passionate about. Like just don't be afraid to trust yourself.
I love it. I always love that question at the end. That was one of my favorite answers I've gotten because very few people think about the longer term time horizon, how important that is. And one, it's saying, hey, listen, it's you got to start somewhere. You got to get uncomfortable. Everything you want is usually on the other side of being scared to death and being uncomfortable at some point, because we don't want to screw up what we have, right? We're always so comfortable in our current environment. And so not being afraid to take that step forward, but also not thinking you have to do everything and accomplish everything in the first year, right? And looking at it from a 5 or 10 year time horizon is, it could be the biggest and best piece of advice I've heard anybody say. Knowing what I know, doing this stuff for 26 years, is being able to look at it with a longer term time horizon and the difference it can make. It's kind of a well repeated saying that people overestimate what they can do in 30 days and underestimate what they will do in a year when they stick with something, right? It's that kind of the, you know, we always want that instant gratification. We always are like, well, if I can't do it tomorrow, then I don't want to do it, right? And even in real estate, that year it takes time to do this stuff. But when you look back after 5 or 10 years of doing something like this, you have a lot of options, right? You're in a whole different position than you would ever have been just, you know, punching that clock and working the day job. And maybe you quit the day job, maybe you don't, maybe that's never the goal, but giving yourself those options to have that thing. And it starts with that longer term time horizon. And I love that answer. I can't tell you how much I love that answer. It's probably my favorite answer of all time, of really saying, hey, listen, look at this from a longer term time horizon as a long-term investment, a longer term goal, and the difference your life will be in 5 or 10 years by sticking with something like this consistently for that period of time, is it will be unrecognizable for most people. And so, yeah, I love that, man. That's a good answer. You get a gold star for that answer, brother.
Nice. I'll take it. I'll check my mail in a few days for my trophy.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome, man. Well, listen, Chris, I love these conversations. They are by far my favorite episodes when I get to talk to you guys and then get caught up on your journey and what's going on, and you're willing to let people listening on these conversations. I very, very much appreciate it. So I appreciate you joining me today, brother. It's been a really fun conversation for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate you having me on, and thanks for everything you and your team's done for us to help get us here.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure to be a part of it for us. We have so much fun. Those of you that are listening, we also know how valuable your time is, and we do appreciate you spending it with us and joining in on these conversations. Our goal is to help you walk into this game with your eyes wide open and share some of these, you know, the journeys and the people that are willing to share their journey into it, so that you know that it's on the, you know, it's usually on the table. A lot of people are closer to this type of a journey than they realize. And so we appreciate you spending the time with us. If you guys know, when you listen to these episodes, I don't run any ads or sponsorships on them. So the only way the show grows is if you guys share it. So at the end of every episode, I ask you those two favors. One is to share the show. If you have somebody that would like to be a part of these conversations, those things really do help us, and we appreciate it. If you have more than 30 seconds, like it or review it on whatever platform you're watching or listening on, and then those platforms will share it. And so both ways help us grow, and we're very appreciative of that. But the most important thing I ask you at the end of every day is to pick that one thing you can do today to start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.